Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In sections 7 and 8 of his essay, The Will to Believe, William James is going to talk about risks. And these risks are tied to our beliefs. Should we, in fact, take on, and going further than that, act upon beliefs, or should we hold ourselves back to not embrace them, to say, I'm not sure which I should actually trust? And one of the people who he's engaging with as an interlocutor here, William Clifford, said that it's always wrong to believe anything without having sufficient evidence. James is going to question that, and he's doing that by carrying out an analysis of what's going on when we do commit ourselves in one way or another, or we have desires or fears going on when it comes to these epistemological questions of beliefs. And he begins section 7 by saying that there are two great commandments, and we could call these epistemological norms or imperatives, right? Things that have to do with knowledge. He says that one of these is to know the truth, and the other is to avoid error. Now, he also points out that you might think that these are basically two sides of the same coin so that they amount to the same thing. By knowing the truth, you avoid error, right? You're not falling into it. And by avoiding error, you're in some way knowing the truth about something, aren't you? Well, not exactly. You can avoid error and never arrive at the truth, as he says. So he's got this great passage. He says, we must know the truth. We must avoid error. These are our first and great commandments as would-be knowers, but they are not two ways of stating an identical commandment. They are two, as he calls them, separable laws. They're describing two different ways of orienting ourselves. So he says, it may sometimes happen when we believe truth A, we escape an incidental consequence from believing falsehood B, right? If I believe that you're in the car waiting for me to drive me to the airport, then if that happens to be true, I'm prevented from believing that you're actually in the airport looking for me, because you can't be in two places at the same time. But that's incidental, as he says. He also goes on and says, it hardly ever happens that merely by disbelieving B, we necessarily believe A. We may, in escaping B, fall into other falsehoods, C or D, just as bad as B. Or we may escape B by not believing anything at all, not even A, the thing that's actually true. And we see this so often in our lives, don't we, that a person will make it clear that they don't buy into this thing over here. And you're like, yeah, but you believe this complete nonsense over here in place of that. Or they pride themselves on their critical thinking or being logical or evidence-based, and they never actually see the things that are staring them in the face, the truths that they could, in fact, know. Now, James says, a little bit further down, that these injunctions are actually what he calls expressions of our passional life. He says these feelings of duty about either truth or error are stemming from this greater penumbra, or you could think of it as foundation, of our affective life, which includes desires, volitions, feelings, all these things, habits, as he says, the circumpressure of our cast and set, all these things that are, strictly speaking, non-rational, non-intellectual elements or dynamics. That applies to these as well. What happens if we select one of these over the other? He says we can go one of two ways. We can prioritize finding truth over avoiding error, or we can prioritize avoiding error over finding truth. And which one we choose is going to stem from, again, our passional or volitional or willing nature, as he says. So we can regard the chase for truth as paramount and the avoidance of error as secondary. We can treat the avoidance of error as more imperative and let truth take its chance. Clifford represents this second way of doing things in an extreme way, because James says we do need to, in some cases, focus primarily on avoiding error. James is arguing in this essay for, at least in some cases, prioritizing finding truth over avoiding error. And whereas Clifford could be seen as an extreme case of the second injunction or imperative, James is positioning himself as a moderate case of the first. He's not embracing prioritizing finding truth over avoiding error in every single situation. As a matter of fact, he makes fun of the law clerks in part because they think it's more important just to have things decided than to have them actually be true or not. Let's take a look closely at that for just a moment. He says, law courts have to decide on the best evidence attainable for the moment. Because a judge's duty is to make law as well as to ascertain it, and, as a learned judge once said to me, few cases are worth spending much time over. The great thing is to have them decided on any acceptable principle and got out of the way. So the idea there is let's just get this stuff done because we have a heavy caseload ahead. And in that case, it's not so much seeking the truth. It's more like, well, let's establish some truth and get it finished with. That would be excessive in this case. So what are the ways in which we can understand these two stances? Let's actually take a look at the second one first, prioritizing avoiding error over finding truth. What is the risk inherent in this? Well, the risk is of not finding or not accepting or not acting upon the truth when you actually have the possibility of finding it. So, you know, a little bit later in the essay, James will give the example of romantic life. If you're going to wait for irrefutable objective evidence before you think that somebody is attracted to you, let alone loves you, and therefore could be a suitable dating partner or potential mate, well, you're never going to make a decision, because anything along those lines, you can find some counterexample or some way of describing the behavior by appealing to other motives or things like that. So you'll never actually make a decision. And you will definitely keep yourself free from the error of believing that somebody loves you when they don't. But you will also deprive yourself of the truth of finding out that somebody loves you when they do. And we could talk about all sorts of other examples as well. This job would be suited to you. Well, I don't know with 100% certainty that it would be. You never really know about a job until you get there and start doing it. Maybe the coworkers are mean. Maybe the boss is a psychopath. Maybe the company is not reporting its financial figures accurately. All these things are possible. And you could say, well, I'm not going to commit to that job. I'm not going to embrace that hypothesis. I'm not going to take that option. And therefore, I will miss out on that truth. So that is a significant issue. And James talks about Clifford here and says that Clifford is in some ways being, if not inconsistent, at least rather selective in what he's making his basis. He says, Clifford, in the instructive passage which I have quoted, exhorts us to take the latter course, treat the avoidance of error as more imperative. Believe nothing, he says. Keep your mind in suspense forever, rather than by closing it on insufficient evidence, incur the awful risk of believing lies. And then James says, you, on the other hand, may think the risk of being in error is a small matter when compared with the blessings of real knowledge, and be ready to be duped many times in your investigation rather than postpone indefinitely the chance of guessing true. And he says, I find it impossible to go with Clifford. Why? Because this stems from our passional life. Clifford is ignoring the fact that he has this horror of finding himself in the condition of having embraced a falsehood. Not everybody's so bothered by that. And James goes on and says, He who says, better to go without belief forever than believe a lie, merely shows his own preponderant private horror of becoming a dupe. And here's the clincher. He may be critical of many of his desires and fears, but this fear he slavishly obeys. And this is what he's saying that Clifford is doing. A little bit later, James points out that, well, two things. One is, maybe falling into error is not the worst thing that could ever happen to a person. It takes a certain kind of individual to think that it actually is the worst thing that could happen to you. But it's a kind of a rare sort, isn't it? Although we do find people like this in many different modes. The other thing that he points out, he uses an analogy here, is that this is sort of like a general or any sort of military officer who refuses to use their soldiers. It says, it's like a general informing his soldiers it's better to keep out of battle forever than to risk a single wound. And you could say, well, what is the point of generals and soldiers then? They don't really serve much of a purpose, do they? Let's talk about the second possibility, that of boldly prioritizing finding truth over avoiding error. Well, there are some risks involved with this as well, right? We risk accepting falsehoods. We risk falling into believing things that we don't actually have sufficient evidence for. When should we do this? So here's where James's distinction between options becomes particularly important. When we have a genuine option that cannot be decided solely by intellectual means or processes, then we probably need to prioritize finding truth and take that risk of falling into falsehood. He says we ought to risk this when options are live. That is, they appeal to us, our passional nature. When they're momentous, if we don't do it now, if we don't take the risk, we're going to miss out. And when they're forced, when we either have to accept it or reject it. Or you could say accept it or do anything other than accept it. And James says that this is not the case all the time. As a matter of fact, prioritizing avoiding error over finding truth, James says that this is how science in general makes progress. Although he does have a proviso here, he says that the person who's totally uncommitted isn't really going to be very good at you know, coming up with hypotheses and testing them. It does require some passion to do science well. But prioritizing avoiding error does, he says, make sense when the options are trivial, when they're not living, when they're not forced. So he says that in scientific questions, this is almost always the case. And in human affairs in general, the need of acting is seldom so urgent that a false belief to act on is better than no belief at all. So he tells us that, you know, in our dealings with objective nature, we are not makers of the truth. We are more recorders of the truth. And when we're looking at physical nature, the questions here are always trivial options. The hypotheses are hardly living. And the choice between believing truth or falsehood is seldom. So he says, the attitude of skeptical balance is the absolutely wise one if we want to avoid mistakes. So James is not saying that we ought to select one of these and just stick with it all the time. We want to, you might say, make a meta decision between prioritizing one of these two approaches from situation to situation and subject matter to subject matter. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.